CBSi on the World, I'm John Batchelor. To London to interpret Moscow. Headlines in the Telegraph. Putin wants Ukraine buffer zone to protect Russia from missile attacks. And flash mob protests overshadow Putin's victory and sham election. And Moscow flights grounded by wave of Ukrainian drone strikes. That's on Crimea. And Putin strolls to victory, but his opponents humiliate and outfox him. I hesitate. I welcome Katrina Vandenhovel, the editorial director and the publisher of The Nation magazine and a columnist at The Washington Post, who has much experience traveling to and from Moscow and other parts of Russia over the years. This is the election of Vladimir Putin for his fifth term, which I believe is going to rival when it finishes in 2030, of Joseph Stalin's time, Djugashvili's time, as the leader, as the strongman of the Soviet state, now the Russian state. Katrina, what are your thoughts about a fifth term for Putin? Is he anxious about a successor? Is he a man who is propelled by some inspiration? Why does he want a fifth term? He's 71 years old. And at this moment, the question is, does he have a successor, or is he going to live out the whole of his life as the president? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I remember being in Moscow December 1999 into January 2000. Millions of Russians watched on their screen, their TV screen, the New Year's Eve celebration, which is a tradition, a ritual. And Boris Yeltsin was embalmed. I mean, a living embalmed man. He couldn't really speak. It was frightening if you cared about nuclear security. And Putin was brought up as the successor, as many people know. They've even followed how he was selected. His first act in power was to give Yeltsin and his family immunity. His second act was probably to look out at the country, which had been looted by the oligarchs Yeltsin created, nuclear plants unstable without adequate security, and a war, the Second Chechen War, which Putin committed himself to winning in fashion we've seen played out in some extent in Ukraine, the brutality of that war metastasized through Russian society, as did terrorist events, Beslan, the school, Nordeast, the theater, not this submarine. But Putin's been there a long time, and I think there was a dress rehearsal to try to move Dmitry Medvedev, now a member of the Putin government, into successor status. He came to Washington, hung out with Obama, went to Ben's Chili. He was generationally compatible, but a number of things, he seems not adequate. And more important, he abstained, I believe, on the Libya vote in the UN, which triggered a whole series of setbacks for Russia. And so he was moved out, and there's a new second in command. But Putin there's been a systematic kind of driving out of any alternative power center. And I'm not talking about Navalny in this case, the tragedy of Navalny. Talking about, you know, the Communist Party in 1996, don't hold me to this, check out some experienced investigative reporters, actually won. But there was so much rigging of that election that Yeltsin won in 96. But Putin coming in, I don't see any successor at this point. They've been systematically eliminated, not killed necessarily, but eliminated through rigging of the election. The question is, would Putin have gotten 88.7%? Probably would have done pretty well. I hate to say it, but war often, even in authoritarian systems, dictatorial systems, does have followers and people who are proud of their country for reasons of war and feel that in this instance, the Russia is doing better than certainly a year ago when signs looked like Russia would not make it. The economy is doing pretty well, despite all the sanctions, which will be increased. The question of the war, I think the key question for Putin, and I'll stop here, is mobilization in both countries, Ukraine and Russia, is one of the most politically sensitive issues. The age has been raised, draft age, and people are, you know, known to be taken off streets or, you know, not protected by dual citizenship. So there's a real fear in both countries. And soldiers get paid a hell of a lot more than conscripts in Russia. And there's a lot of money going around, not just missiles and weapons, but money which is fueling a war economy to fight the sanctions and to bring people, mostly men, obviously, into the system of war.
I have no reason to doubt the popularity of Vladimir Putin in the polling. So I go to the apprehension of Europe, because there is an expectation of, I mentioned Mr. Burns said, unless America supports Ukraine with weapons and ammunition, Russia is going to make big gains in the coming spring offensive. I have no reason to doubt the fact that Russia is not only doing better, but is in a position to dominate the battlefield coming up. And so Europe is seeing this and going in the way of rearming itself. Yeah. Wall Street Journal, right now, in Central Europe, Czechs go hunting for arms for Ukraine, or EU finally boosts defense investment into arms production. So Ukraine is right now, but are we looking at another long war, a face-off between NATO and Putin? Is Putin aware of this? Does he want this? Can we tell?
Obviously, you're going to need Ukraine and Russia at the table. Who else? The United States. You're going to need the United States. Europe at the moment is facing real challenges. I mean, Germany's deindustrializing. Its economy is worse than Russia's, even with the sanctions on Russia. The EU is facing deficits. NATO is facing deficits. The danger of moving these funds to fast-tracking Ukraine, for example, into NATO, or the EU funding, what you're doing is militarizing so that any alternative security arrangements that might reassure Ukraine in another way in the context of a post-war armistice or peace agreement is going to be very tough. I think much will have to wait until after the elections. And the question will be, will people fight to continue arming, though it can't be at the level it was unless there are caches of weapons in many parts of this world we don't know about, but the Global South, for example, which is being provided mostly with weapons, isn't in the mood to support this. Could be a long war in the Atlantic, transatlantic region. I do think it's going to test Europe, and it's going to test old Europe, Italy, Germany, France, Spain, UK, and the new Europe is going to rise, I think, ascendant in a sense, unless there's some thinking through about an alternative security architecture that isn't NATO, and that has the kind of confines of an EU, which was designed, or the OSCE wasn't designed as a military unit. But I think it's going to require outside. We know there were attempts. We know we were sitting talking about the UK, Boris Johnson, former prime minister, went over to Istanbul to squash things because it looked like Ukraine was winning. And that was the expectation, even though Putin was kind of delusional about Russia taking Ukraine in 2 days. What was clear a year ago is no longer clear now that Ukraine is doing so well. So how we resolve that is a central issue.
30 seconds. It is said that Russia's going to a war economy. Is Europe going to a war economy in your measure?
I believe it is. I think it's stripping support for the modernization of their economies, for human needs, for social needs. And at a very risky time, because there are elements of post-war, before World War II, the rise of a right-wing populism at best in Europe will be buffeted and fueled by this.
What we're looking at then is a map for the 21st century, unless somebody pulls back. Two armed camps that can't build enough missiles, correct?
Yeah, though I think there will be some intervention, but NATO is going to be tested, and it will prove in some ways, I think, not to be the right instrument for what is needed to resolve Ukraine-Russia. But we'll see. But the whole militarization today, the Swedish organization SIPRI, which measures arms sales, it's off the charts. It's unprecedented. It's uncharted.
Katrina Vandenhoevel of The Nation magazine. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,